Welcome to our paranormal afterlife.
I have a new website. It is simonbound.com. That's Bown, not Brown. It replaces the Past Lives Hypnosis website. And you can go to the new website for Past Life Regression, as well as info on my books and podcasts. This is an Our Paranormal Afterlife remastered episode, and I'm your host, Simon Bown. I've recently gone back and listened to some of the older episodes, and I was reminded just how much valuable, relevant insight they still offer. So I'm going to be re-releasing one episode each week, now with updated and remastered audio for a much better listening experience. In this episode, I'm talking to William Peters about the Shared Crossing Project. William is a licensed psychotherapist and is the founder of the Shared Crossing Project. He is a licensed psychotherapist at the Family Therapy Institute in Santa Barbara, specializing in end-of-life counseling. He has served as a Zen hospice volunteer, and his work is informed by his two near-death experiences and a variety of shared death experiences. Thank you very much for coming onto the podcast. It's really kind of you to give us your time. First of all, could you tell us a little bit about your background?
So, you know, by formal training, I'm a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist. I work in Santa Barbara at the Family Therapy Institute. But I'm really, as much as I focus on mental health, my practice is focused primarily on end-of-life bereavement and psycho-spiritual issues related to those experiences, but actually any experience. I think that, you know, just based on my own particular experiences, which I'll go into in a moment, but those experiences have really prepared me to be quite comfortable and receptive to people who are having any type of extraordinary spiritual experience. And most mental health practitioners really are not trained to deal with spiritually transformative experiences. Don't know much about them, and may even look askance at them, discount them, and even in the worst case analysis, they might even disparage or pathologize people who are having these experiences, thinking that may be part of a mental illness. But my own personal experience was that I had a near-death experience when I was 17 years old, high-speed skiing accident, and it was a pretty classic near-death experience. In the sense that I made it, you know, crossed on my skis, flew into the air. And then when I landed, it was a huge, you know, like thud, and all the kind of like the lights, the energy in my body left. I went into darkness. Next thing I knew, I was sailing away from my body that was on the ski slopes, but I could see my body on the ski slopes. And this was near Lake Tahoe, Squaw Valley International Ski Center. And there's a beautiful lake there, Lake Tahoe. I could see, as I got further away from my body, I could see the San Francisco Bay Area, the Big Bay there, and eventually the Colorado Rockies, continental North America, and then eventually the oceans, and then I was out seeing Earth. And at some point I remember realizing that, oh my God, as I'm doing this, my life is being shown to me in chronological order, deep emotional experiences, as every interaction in my life is being shown to me rapidly, emotionally, as I said, and with intricate detail. And I really got a sense for the karma involved in life, the ripple effects of every action, cause and effect, and how my life did matter and how it impacted others. And then I was in this tunnel, this classical near-death experience rib tunnel, and a light appeared at the end, and I realized I was going towards that light, and I realized at that point that I was dying. And in my experience, I was very uncomfortable. In fact, resisted this notion of dying. And I pled with that light, which I grew up Catholic. So I realized that that light for me was God. And I pled with God saying, I'm not ready to die. I have to go back. You can't let me die. I haven't done what I came here to do. Interesting words were evoked in me. Like, I haven't done what I came here to do. Like, I even knew as I was living my life, this human life, that I knew what I was here to do. But in that space, it was clear to me that I had not finished my work. And I entered this light, felt great love, great support. And I was kind of, as I bathed in that light, I eventually was pushed back. And that great source said, make something of your life. And I mean, not said in words, I just kind of got that in my body. It was a knowing, a reception of some transmission. And I wound my way back into my body.
That's quite different to a lot of near-death experiences who are desperate to stay, aren't they? And they argue to stay there.
Yeah, mine is very unique in that way. Yeah, definitely. I was not ready to die, even in spite of the great feelings that I was experiencing there. However, I will say I didn't see any relatives, beings of light, people that I knew who had predeceased in any way, except in the review of my life. So it was a bit of a solitary experience. I don't think anyone was expecting me at that time. And so the welcoming gates weren't exactly open.
They didn't get the email saying, come down and meet.
Yeah, there was no memo for a welcoming party, which is interesting because as we talk about shared death experiences later, hopefully in our interview today, that is one of the key features in a shared death experience that our experiencers, as they're watching their loved ones transition, they frequently share with us that there's a party, a welcoming party that they can hear, that they can even enter in some cases, and it's welcoming the departed, the dying home in a certain way. But they are not. They realize that they may get a glimpse of the party. They may be there for a short period of time, but very quickly they'll have to return to their life. So this welcoming party is an important aspect for sure.
You trained as a medium, is that right?
Well, I lived with John of God in the John of God community in Brazil. And so this is, I can tie this all together. So as a result of this high-speed skiing accident, I crushed my spine. My lower lumbar spine was compression fractured in three spots. And I was in an excruciating amount of pain. I was lucky not to be paralyzed in any way. However, I was very restricted in my physical activity. I could really only walk. And even that over time became painful. So I lived, for about 30 years in severely debilitating pain, could never sit without pain. I could stand, I could lay down. I was very fortunate that I could lay down and sleep without pain. But I did, I was in a great deal of pain. And so when I heard of John of God doing these miracle healings in Brazil as a spiritist medium, I was curious. And actually a family member who had cancer at the time invited me to accompany him down there. And so I did, but I thought I was going just because I happened to be fluent in Spanish and was conversant with Latin American culture, so I could, be a good guide, if you will. I wasn't really thinking of it for myself. I mean, I was a little bit as I got closer into the experience. But long story short, I went down there. I met the healing spirits that John of God channels, and I was feeling like, whoa, this is an amazing energy that's being conducted here. And it was opening my heart. And I was feeling like, if they're saying that they can heal all these people, and I was meeting all sorts of people at the CASA, they call it the Casa de Don Ignacio, who were being healed of severe cancers and autoimmune issues and, a lot of orthopedic stuff as well. People come in on crutches and walk out. So I thought, well, this is as good of a chance as I've ever felt. And I'm an inherently spiritual person. So I really was enjoying it and feeling like this felt like a calling to me. So I moved my family at that time had a 10-month-old daughter, we moved down there and lived there for 2 years. And after that 2 year experience, I was increasingly gradually, I should say for the first year, year and a half, it was more heavy lifting of meditating, you know, 6+ hours a day when the center was open. And the healing was slow, but it felt like things were happening. And then literally, you know, soon after arriving back to the Santa Barbara, my home in the United States, I was getting dramatically better. My back pain diminished by about 90-95%. My physical activity returned. I could run and hike and, you know, swim and do things that I had not really been able to do, you know, and since I'm 17 years old. So yeah, that was that experience. And, you know, you say I was a medium. You know, when I worked there, because I was technically a medium of the CASA, and I always consider myself medium light, if you will, you know, because there's so many powerhouse mediums down with John of God. They come from all over the world. There's kind of an in-house staff as well. And you know, I hear what people were seeing and doing in these, they call them current sessions, these meditation sessions. And I always said, you know, I know I'm a medium. He says I'm a medium. He's training me. But I had a lot of deference to the real Brazilian spiritist mediums who were really a league above. But when I came back, I will say, I started having amazing gifts of seeing spirits and seeing people's deceased loved ones, and started having medium sessions where people would come and I would be the central medium. And it was spectacular. So I still have that ability. But I don't focus on it. I don't work as a medium. My work is as a psychotherapist, a family therapist. I help people with end of life, and I teach people how to have these shared crossing experiences. To me, that's the best integration of my skills, because I want people, and I teach people how to have a direct experience with their departed loved ones in the spirit realm as they're dying. How to have communication with them after they die. So I really feel like, and I'm on the methods that we've developed, the Shared Crossing Project, have you know, been demonstrated through our research to basically give people this capacity. I can say a little bit more about that when you're ready to hear about the Shared Crossing spectrum of experience. But you know, you might want to know that I had another near-death experience from a blood disease when I was 30 years old. And that was an experience where I was in the ICU, critical care unit, because my blood platelets had crashed. I had a hemophiliac tradition, and I was a hemophiliac condition. Hope it doesn't become a tradition. And I was floating above my body for about, you know, I don't even know, maybe 2 to 4 hours. And I was watching all the nursing and medical staff in the middle of the night working. I was just moving about the 10th floor of this intensive care unit. And I was aware that I was just consciousness, observing things. I didn't really have any identity. I had some loose identity to me, but I'm not exactly sure how I made sense of it. Because when I did finally see my body, identified my body down in the bed, it was only because a doctor came in the middle of the night to say, Mr. Peters, I'd like to talk to you. And it was kind of waking me up. And I realized at that moment, oh, that's me. And I thought, well, really? I'm actually up here. I don't even know if that's me, but I think I can go back into that body. I mean, I knew it was me from that light, but the real essence of me, the spirit me, the soul me, the perhaps the eternal me, was above my body. So that was a very profound out-of-body experience as a very near-death experience. I was lucky to survive that. Doctor said that most people would have died from my hemophiliac condition, but I survived. And yeah, after that, I became increasingly interested in these states of consciousness beyond the human body, and became very interested in the experiences that mystics had throughout time, Christian mystics, but also mystics in the East, since I developed a Buddhist meditation practice soon after that in the Theravadan tradition, more because it allowed me to deal with the pain and suffering, physical pain and mental anguish in my life as a result of my back pain and compromised health from the hemophiliac condition, which I should say did heal over time. And John of God put the finishing touches on that condition as well.
So can you tell us about your grandmother's deathbed visions?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I should say that there was a great deal of, cancer, primarily in my mother's side of the family. And so death was something that I was experiencing throughout my adulthood in particular. But in 1998, my grandmother, who was at the time 93 years old, I had just come back from South America, a trip through South America. And I went to go see her. And when I walked into the room, it was like walking into a conversation. It was like bursting into a conversation. I could feel like almost an energetic bubble around her. She was conversing quite adamantly with some others in the room. And I realized there was something going on here. And so I took out a pen and paper and started jotting down who she was talking to, some of the details, and went back and talked to my uncle, who was at the time kind of the elder in the family. And he shared with me that the information that I was revealing to him was indeed factual from her life, but some 50 years previous. But oh my God. So it was pretty clear to me that she was having a real conversation with family and friends, and some not friends. Actually, she's pretty having an argument with somebody. But this person was real, and it was someone who she'd had a bit of a feud with during her life that I never heard of, but that my uncle had. And this just really confirmed for me, well, I shouldn't say it confirmed, but it got me curious in what we now call pre-death dreams and visions. They're also called also deathbed visions, end-of-life dreams and visions. But it's important to note, and in fact, our research is clarifying this, now, since we still study these as part of the Shared Crossing Research Initiative, that these are visitations and they're visions. These are not dreams. One of the confusions with calling these dreams is that they often happen at night during sleep states, but they're not dreams. I'm a psychotherapist. I work with people's dreams quite a bit. These are qualitatively different in the fact that they're more real than real. In fact, that's the phrase we often hear from our research participants. They are clear. They're coherent. They come with a very tangible, pragmatic, useful message. These visitations often come with a sense of helping the person process unfinished business, and eventually as a way to comfort and offer guidance to the dying in their transition from this human realm into the next dimension in the spirit realm. So that was an experience with my grandmother that confirmed for me the existence of these. I would do more research obviously later, but that was an initiatory process because it was so clear to me that she was in a real conversation.
And that in some way was a shared death experience you had with her.
Well, it wouldn't be in our terminology a shared death experience because my grandmother was not dying in that moment. It would be what we call a pre-death visitation, pre-death vision. She would die a few weeks later. So a shared death experience is something completely different in the sense that in a shared death experience, the experiencer, which in this case would be me, I would have been able to go into the initial stages of the afterlife with my grandmother and see where she was, maybe share in the review of her life, the past life review, be able to observe that, perhaps see other deceased relatives and friends that were serving as guides for her. There might be a welcoming party for her that was forming. I might see the light, somewhere. So there's a great deal of phenomena with shared death experiences that are different from the pre-death vision.
Well, can you tell us about the Shared Crossing Project?
Yeah. So the Shared Crossing Project, I started officially in 2013, although the truth is I started doing groups in 2011 and 2012 around really the mission is to raise awareness and educate people about the many profound and healing experiences that are available to the dying and their loved ones at the end of a human life and soon after. And so when I started offering these groups, the first group was Life Beyond Death. And we started studying these phenomena that occur before the death of a human being. And the interest was in our little town of Santa Barbara here, which is only, 100,000 in town and 200,000 in the larger area, was spectacular. I mean, I literally was able to do three groups in the first year of 8 weeks each and continued with follow-ups and what have you. But what happened was, in addition to these kind of raising awareness about these experiences, people were increasingly wanting support around their own end of life experiences, primarily as caregivers to their loved ones. And so I developed shared crossing protocols, which, I should say this all got started because I met Raymond Moody in 2009, and he was talking about the shared death experience. And I said to him, this experience where the loved ones or the, caregivers report going into the afterlife with their departing loved ones. I said, I've had these. And, I should actually give us a little more context, Simon, because in 2000, 1999 through 2002, I worked at the Zen Hospice Project in San Francisco. And this is really important to understanding how the Shared Crossing Project came to be, because this was a very progressive, Buddhist-oriented hospice in San Francisco. And it was a 24-bed hospice at a public hospital, Laguna Honda Hospital in San Francisco. And there were people dying all the time. And this, for a hospice worker, is really meaningful, exciting work because you're with people dying quite a bit. So while I was there, I had a series of what I would now call shared crossing experiences. I'd have experienced pre-death. I'd hear people talk about their pre-death dreams and visions, the dying. And I see this phenomenon called terminal surge, which we call terminal surge, is a type of terminal lucidity. That's what the medical community calls it, where people are, just as they're dying, just the moments before they die, they have a huge surge in energy in their body, or so it seems, and their eyes open wide. And, they may have been comatose for, days, if not weeks. And all of a sudden they are conversant. It's this last hurrah before they finally die. And sometimes people can do things like, stand up out of their bed. And sometimes people with dementia can carry on fluent conversations with their caregivers and loved ones around their bed as if they've been in regular contact for, the recent history. But then the real crown jewel to this piece is the shared death experience. And that's, as I've said, this is the experience where someone goes into the afterlife with their departing loved one, or they're a caregiver and go into the afterlife with them. So when I was at the share at the Zen Hospice Project, my one afternoon, I was just reading a story to a gentleman who was very close to death. And in the midst of my reading, I popped out of my body and I was suspended above my body and his body. And we acknowledged each other in this next dimension. He looked at me with a very smug grin as if to say, check this out. And I had the sense that he had invited me into this space to see where he was. And it was very mind-altering. I was like, oh my gosh. But then again, I was very comfortable being there. I think because of my previous near-death experiences, I was familiar with this state. And I don't know how long we stayed up there. I don't think it was too long, or I stayed up there. But a few moments later, I was back in my body, and I'm not even sure I stopped reading. In other words, it's very possible that I had jumped into this space, this dimension, and was still, you know, carrying on in my earthly human dimension, reading to him. So that with when I had that experience, I was very excited, and I went to go share it with our supervisor, who is a Zen practitioner. And when I shared it with him, he was not very moved by it. He kind of looked at me and said, "Oh, William, phenomena rolling by, let it go." So he was rather discounting of my experience, very, very, you know, Zen-ish, you know, in the sense that it's all phenomena, don't pay much attention to it, let go of everything. And then he sent me over to another bed to attend to someone else who was dying, which is all well and good. But I really thought these experiences were extraordinary, this one, and I would have more of them. But I didn't talk about them as much anymore in Zen Hospice because I realized that they were not so much interested in that. But when I heard Raymond Moody speak some 11 years later, this is after I'd gone to Brazil, of course, and come back. And Raymond talked about the shared death experience. And I went up to him afterwards. I said, not only do I know about the shared death experience, I think I can help people have them because I've kind of had a lot of these. I think I know the terrain. Well, Raymond was very supportive. He said, well, William, if you can make that happen, you know, if you can help us understand this phenomena, that would be wonderful because we don't know a thing about it. I mean, science has no explanation. So I came home and as I said, I started those groups and I started developing protocols to facilitate the shared death experience. And we tried them out and we had some success. People that we were training were reporting, you know, the shared death phenomena. And I should share one other experience because this was a groundbreaking moment in the history of the creation of the Shared Crossing Project. And that is that a woman called me who was actually a friend of my mother's, and she had ovarian cancer, was very near the end of her life. And she asked me to teach her the protocols to facilitate a shared death experience. She'd read Raymond Moody's book, Glimpses of Eternity, where he explains this phenomena. And I said, well, normally, you know, Sandy, when we do this type of training, it's better that you work with a loved one. And she said, oh, I would love to be able to do that, but none of my family believe in this stuff. I'm the only spiritual one. And I said, well, okay, I'll try and teach you the protocols and see if it has any effect. I hope it does. So I did teach her that. And she died a couple weeks later. And then about a week later, her daughter called me. And her daughter, Cindy, said, hey, I know you were working with my mom about some spiritual stuff. And I want to share something with you that happened on the night of my mother's death. So, well, thank you. And so she then proceeded to tell me that the night her mother died, it was the middle of the night, and she was awoken suddenly with a strong pull upon her chest. And she responded with, I don't want to die. I'm not ready to die. And she was very clear that she was resisting this. But then as she looked out, into the distance, she saw her, no, she saw a little being with blonde hair. And she thought, oh my God, that's my child. I can't let her die. So she, you know, went out there to get her. And when she got there, it was her mother. And her mother turned to her and said, you see that I'm alive and well. I will love you always. Go back and tend to your family and live your life fully. And I will see you again when the time is right. And if you need help, call upon me. And with that, this woman, Cindy, startled, went down the hall and realized that her mother had died. Is that just at that time? So that is a shared death experience. And that was the experience that told me in like 2012, I believe, that our protocols, our methods could work even when we were working with just the person dying. Because we had a lot of success working with loved ones together in which one was dying. Excuse me. So this was really confirmation. And at that point, we started the Shared Crossing Project in earnest and started, you know, developing a series of training programs. We formed a research collaboration with University of California at Santa Barbara. There, Department of Religious Studies and Cognitive Sciences. They were wanting to study both all the people that were in our groups, because at this time we had now, I mean, dozens and dozens of people in our groups. And we were also had a lot of people who were engaged in the Shared Crossing Training Program, which is also a group, but it's more of a community. And that program later changed its name to the Shared Crossing Pathways. We continue to teach that program. And this is a preparation, not just for the shared crossing experiences, but also for a conscious, connected, and loving end-of-life experience. Because we learn that to the extent that people can address their unfinished business and heal with their loved ones, that we find that this facilitates or enables at a greater probability the experiences of the shared death experience and other shared crossings. So That's what happened. The research continues today. In fact, we're now deeply involved with another round of research that I'm using to write a book about these experiences. And yeah, that's the Shared Crossing Project. In fact, we have a training program, the Shared Crossing Pathways, coming up the first weekend in December. And people will be coming in from all over the United States, and we'll teach them how to have these experiences.
And do you run these pathway programs regularly?
Well, we did historically, and I say that kind of hesitantly because yes, we do, but I have cut back on the offerings because we're doing a good deal of research and I'm writing a book, so I just don't have as much time to offer this program. But we are doing one, like I said, in next month, and we'll probably do one again in May. I used to do them kind of, you know, people would, end-of-life communities would invite me down to do this program. But I'm still open to doing that. I still do that a bit, but we haven't done as much of that as we did historically. There was a time when we were offering this program quite frequently, but now it's a little bit less.
So on the website, sharedcrossing.org, you've got some examples of elements that have been experienced by people who are having shared death experiences. Could we go through the list and you describe each one?
Sure, go ahead. You want to read the list or I can...
Yeah, the first one is missed at death.
Oh yeah, so this is, that's a term that Raymond Moody coined, missed at death. We tend to call this now, as I'm writing it, the book, where terminology is evolving. So we call this soul spirit leaving the body. And this is actually more frequent than one might imagine, because people will say that they either see a ghostly or vaporish, maybe even a smoky mist leaving typically the heart, throat, or third eye or crown part of the body. And sometimes it's like a, it's often translucent, sometimes in the shape of the body. So yeah, and people really say quite clearly, I saw my father's spirit leave his body. And then you push him for the physical descriptors, and I've kind of given those. Yeah. But yeah, that's a common element.
And the next one is hearing beautiful music.
Yeah. You know, once again, Raymond Moody had a great, he said he heard that phenomena a lot. We hear that. That's people hearing divine music or sounds. That I remember working with somebody. We have a music academy here in the Santa Barbara. It's world renowned. So musicians come from all over the world to train here. And it's called Music Academy of the West. And one person came to see me who was a musician, and he reported hearing a music at the death of his mother that he had never even imagined was possible. He was quite skilled musician. And he said this was the most heavenly, divine, heartwarming music he'd ever heard, and in tones unimaginable. So this is, we hear that. I will say we don't hear that as much as Raymond seemed to find in his research. We don't know why that is, but, you know, we've got some 200 cases, and I think less than 15 have reported that, 15, 20, which, you know, it's a something, but it's not a huge something.
And the next one is change in the geometry of the room.
Yeah, so we call this alteration of time-space continuum. Raymond called it change in geometry of the room. And this is when people will report, like, they're in the room with someone dying, and all of a sudden they feel like the room warps a bit. The hard corners, right, you know, square corners get rounder or softer. And they feel like the time and space starts getting weird. They may even find themselves going into another dimension. So, yeah, one person said it was like, you know, we live in this 3D dimension, but when my mom died, it's like, oh, all of a sudden started seeing like a fourth dimension. It was like there were different things going on that I had never seen before.
And so the next one on the list is a strong upward pull on the body.
Yeah, I just shared an example of that with Sandy. You know, this one is something that we do hear quite a bit. And it's as if there's a pulling that can be actually uncomfortable for people. But the education we're providing is one of the purposes is so people realize, hey, when you feel this pulling on your chest, don't worry about it. It's just part of the shared death experience. Go with it, and it will take you to another dimension that's quite meaningful.
And the next one on the list is shared out-of-body experience.
Yeah, so, you know, I shared that too with my experience with a gentleman at Laguna Honda Hospital, Zen Hospice, where you just, you know, experiencers just report that they're suspended above their body. They're looking down at their own physical body and that of the departing loved one. And they're acknowledging the presence of the dying spirit, in this other dimension, quite.
And then seeing a mystical light.
So the mystical light, as you probably, as your viewers probably know, is that is very common in the near-death experience. And the light is different in the shared death experience in that the light is around, but the experiencers don't go into it. They don't enter the light as they often do in the near-death experience. But the light can be cascading down. It can be, it's often luminous, voluminous, and quite inspiring or awe-inspiring to the experiencer. So light is clearly an essential element in the shared death experience. It's just a little different in its presentation than in the near-death experience.
And next we have emphatically co-living the life review of the dying person.
Yeah. So that's co-experiencing the life review. And this is where an experiencer will be somehow observing the life review of their now departed loved one or departing loved one. And they'll be able to see in intricate details the formative experiences for their departing loved one. And what I love about this feature is that it engenders a great deal of compassion from the experiencer, from the caregiver loved one to the person dying, because they'll see things in that person's life that help explain perhaps idiosyncratic or painful behaviors on the part of their departing loved one. I worked with a woman who was very resistant as her mother was dying to have anything to do with her mother. And I said, you know, you might want to just give it your best shot, hang in there with her and support her as best you can, because afterwards you may regret it if you don't. She reluctantly took my counsel, ended up kind of reuniting with her mother. And at the moment of her mother's death, she reported that she saw her mother's life review. And in this life review, she saw that her mother was deeply abused by one of her parents, and that she could only say that she was, based on what she saw her mother experience, that her mother had become a spectacular parent, and she was very pleased and honoring of her mother for having survived the death, that experience with her a parent. And so she had compassion for her mother.
That was a very healing experience.
Very healing experience. I mean, you know, we wouldn't be getting the word out about these shared death experiences if they did not have healing power. And they absolutely do. I'll talk a little bit about that towards the end here.
Well, the next one on the list is greeted by beings of light.
So, yeah. So this is quite common. Also called the welcoming party. So as the person's dying, the experiencer loved one will express that they observe their departing loved one being welcomed home, being greeted by either beings of light or something, some entity that they identify as usually as recognizable deceased or departed loved ones from their now departing loved one's life. And this is very healing, very supportive to the loved one, because it's like a handoff. They're handing off their loved one to his or her friends on the other side. And yeah, I mean, this is a beautiful thing, seeing beings of light. But one of the things we find quite entertaining about this feature is that the presentation of these beings of light is usually that they're much younger and vibrant and much more attractive. So they seem to come back at their best, as their best self from the previous life.
And next is encountering heavenly realms.
So yes, this is these beautiful dimensions or hyper real, more real than real, heavenly abodes. They're described differently, but generally they make a big impact on the experiencer, because they're seeing, often they say it's like we're seeing the most beautiful landscapes and majestic landscapes that they've ever imagined.
And then the last one is the boundary in the heavenly realm.
Yeah, so the boundary is fascinating, because people will say that they were progressing through the afterlife with their departed loved one, and then all of a sudden, either overtly, that means they see a physical boundary of some site, a bridge or a fence or a door that they can't go beyond, but their departing loved one can. So that would be like more of an overt boundary in the spiritual realm. But sometimes it's kind of implicit, you know, or not kind of. It's not physical ramification. And they just have a sense of knowing, oh, I've got to turn around and go back. This is as far as I can go. So, but there is a boundary. And the loved ones seem to know just where that is.
Is it something you work on, isn't it, that you can induce a shared death experience, that you can work towards it so that it will happen? Is that right?
Yeah, and yes, indeed. And we probably have a little over 200 people that have done our various trainings. And of those people, when they have a death experience to be present to, over 80% of them will report, at least at this point, we can tell from our data, report having some type of shared crossing experience with the person transitioning. So some they'll see that, you know, if they're the caregiver or loved one, they'll notice that their loved one is having a dream, a visitation from the other side. They'll observe terminal surge, perhaps. They'll have a shared death experience for sure. And on the other side of death, they might be visited. We have direct post-death communication. So maybe the loved one will have a direct communication from their loved one. Or maybe they will be visited, a post-death visitation. Or maybe there'll be some spectacular synchronicities around the death of their loved one. All these things happen in different ways, all unique experiences. And we feel that, in fact, our alums report that they feel that the Shared Crossing Pathway Program facilitated this for them, gave them the tools to have this experience. And of course, the most common one is the shared death experience. And that is the experience we've talked about mostly today. So when you have that experience, you really feel a great deal of peace and ease about death and dying.
Have you noticed that these people have deathbed coincidences as well?
Well, I appreciate you using that term, because that is a term that Peter Fenwick and Elizabeth Fenwick use in your country. And, you know, Peter called these experiences when somebody remotely located from the death of a loved one would somehow feel an energetic push upon their body, to which they would recognize that this is a loved one that they knew who was dying, and that person had come to let them know that they were dying and to say goodbye, to let them know they were dying, to thank them, say goodbye. Well, in our research, we call these we have three types of SDEs, three types of shared death experiences. This is the ways that we have seen experienced in our research. The first one is a bedside SDE, and that is you're at the bedside and you have all these phenomena of entering into the afterlife with your departing loved one. There's also the remote SDE. So you're not at the bedside. You're somewhere, you know, down the hall, or, you know, maybe another room, or far away. You can be in another country, you know, far away, but you have a full blown SDE, which is what I've described already. Those elements that you have identified, Simon, are the elements that they report to us in their interview. But there's another type of remote SDE, and that's we give it a separate category itself, and we call this the flyby. And the flyby is analogous to Peter and Elizabeth Fenwick's deathbed coincidence, although we don't call them coincidences, because we don't think they're coincidences. And the reason why is we see a great deal of intention on the part of the dying to make an effort to come back, to say thank you, I love you, and goodbye. And those, they often, in these experiences, I was just reading a research case yesterday where the deceased comes back just at the time of death and gives them information that will be useful in their life. So they often come with gifts as well.
If anybody listening to this podcast has had a shared crossing, can they submit their experience to you to support your research?
Would love that. We would very much appreciate that. Thank you for bringing that up. And they can go to, they can email me directly at william@charingcrossing.com, or they can go to our contact page and fill out the form there. It's easy to fill out. It's self-explanatory. It's how to share our share crossing account with us. And then they can just send it to us, and we'll probably follow up with an interview in a few weeks after they send it to us.
Great. And that's at sharedcrossing.org.
.com.
Okay. And when do you expect to have the book available?
Well, that's a good question. I'm writing it with a co-author. The co-author, many of your listeners may know, Paul Perry. He wrote a number of books with Raymond Moody and others in the near-death experience category, and his four New York Times bestsellers. So we're doing this gradually. We're hoping for a year from now at this time, but no promises, because these projects, as I've been told, take on a life of them all of their own. And I'm hoping by next year this time.
Well, thank you very much for being a guest on the podcast. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you, Simon. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks. And my book, which is titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And the audiobook is also available on Spotify. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.